Hello and welcome to episode 177 of Game Store Profits, the podcast where some folks get together to talk about God and games and how these things come together beautifully to make wonderful relationships and just do awesome things in the lives of all those involved. And it's just me, Mike Perna, your solitary co-host. For those of you who are new here, solo Mike episodes basically happen when the world collapses, at least in regards to our scheduling. Normally, we try to do all of our recording significantly in advance so that we can be like, oh, okay, so if we need a delay, no big deal. We'll, you know, we have several days between when we record and when it's supposed to get posted. We'll find a day. Except for those times like this week when it got delayed and then delayed. And then delayed some more. And so here I am, and it's just me. The other guys couldn't make it work, couldn't make it happen. And, you know, I could have just said, you know, hey, let's just skip it. Well, you know, what's the big deal? But I really enjoy doing this for you guys. I really enjoy the feedback that you guys give us. We love the fact that you come and listen to our podcast and think that occasionally we actually say something worth listening to. And, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, as you've come to expect every other week, you're going to be able to tune in to an episode of Game Store Profits, and I want to keep that going. So, in an effort to try and figure out what kind of content I could do, because I would literally just be riffing on nonsense if I was trying to do a solo mic episode in the kind of gaming vacuum that I've been in lately, there has not been a whole lot of opportunity to play things. I've been investigating things. Heck, I even picked up a tiny, tiny, itty-bitty new party game called Cockroach Poker. It's not a new game, but it's new to me. In order to make sure that we got that out for TavernCon, because that's happening. But I could riff a bit about all that stuff, but instead I turned to the wonder that is the regulars community. I went to our people and said, so what do y'all want to hear about? And these are always fascinating because it's interesting to see what kinds of questions get asked, especially now that the community has kind of absorbed not only just, you know, your average everyday gamer, but you also have other podcasters, you know, and media creators. You've got game designers, you've got publishers, you've got all sorts of people in this weird little awesome collective of people that we've gathered. And so it's interesting to see what kind of questions got asked. So we're going to spend some time just going through those questions, going through my answers. I'm pretty confident this will be over the time of what I often would consider my cutoff point for what makes something more than a bonus content episode. But I don't know. It might be shorter. Heck, it might even be longer because y'all gave me a lot of questions to deal with. So it all depends on how rambly I get. But before we get into any of those questions, I just want to make sure that we touch on a couple things and even get to the archive dive, because, dang it, I'm still going to try and make that a thing. Okay, so for the news. The first bit of news is that I'm going to actually be on Saving the Game. They didn't tell me exactly what date it was going to be published, because those guys are actually even more on the ball than we try to be, because they actually have a couple episodes in advance. Gosh, planning is a wonderful thing. Anyway, so in the fairly near future, I'm going to be showing up on Saving the Game, oddly enough, talking about board games on a role-playing podcast. But not only did we have a lot of fun, it was really fun to not only get to maintain my hashtag every 33 episodes, which is still going strong. That I will never, I don't know, no one else finds that entertaining, but I really do. But anyway, it was nice to hang out with Peter and Grant again. It was really nice to meet Jenny, because Jenny Dixon, I swear this woman is just wonderful, because she likes a lot of the same games that I do. But anyway, I'm not going to spoil that episode. I'm not going to spoil what happens on that podcast, because it's good stuff. Not only is it good stuff just because I was entertained, but also because some of the questions that you folks were asking me, we talked about that stuff. And so it'll be fun. I'm not going to identify which ones, because I want you to listen to that podcast when it comes out, because you should just be listening to their podcast. They have amazing content. But So I will be sure, trust me, not only will they be posting it, but I will post it on our Facebook page on in the tavern. I will make sure that you get word that that episode has gone up because we love those guys. They were our first, you know, sister podcast out in the world of talking about games and God on the airwaves, as it were. And it's been a lot of years hanging out with them and doing kind of crossover content with them. So, yeah, it's always good to be able to support that. The other bit of news, obviously, is TavernCon. TavernCon is roughly 1 month away from the time I'm recording this. In case you are somehow under a rock and haven't heard me talk about it yet, TavernCon is our annual fundraiser where we get to do just a lot of gaming and try to raise the money that we need to do the rest of the stuff that we do throughout the year. We've been really blessed this year, especially with a bunch of people who've decided that they want to support the ministry. Not only by word of mouth or volunteering their time, but also financially. So TavernCon is no longer the end-all and be-all of what we get to do in the year, but it is still a really large chunk that allows us to do the stuff that we get to do, like going out to GaryCon to run the games library there, to go to churches and run gaming events at absolutely zero cost to those churches. All that stuff that we end up doing, all of that is covered, as well as all the boring, monotonous stuff like making sure that the website is hosted and making sure that we get all the podcasts up and all that stuff. All that stuff gets covered with the stuff that we raise at TavernCon. So anything that people want to come out and use to support us, we have the prizes. We have open gaming, which literally costs $0 because we don't want anybody who is going to be standing at the door because they don't feel they can come in to a fundraiser if they don't have a lot of money. It costs zero to get in. There are some really cool events, the paint and take, where you can walk away with a very cool miniature and instructions on how to paint that from one of our resident painters, my buddy Brett Anderson, who's really, really good, and he will bring a lot of different things to show. But if you didn't need anything else, you can look at my copy of Blood Rage because he painted that, and my goodness, is it stunning. We're going to have the Pretense Meta Tournament where we use Pretense, designed by our friend Jason Tagmeyer, to run a tournament going on while the rest of the gaming is happening for a chance to win a bunch of Button Shy stuff because we love Button Shy. I'll mention them again too in a little bit, trust me. We also have some really fun stuff. Sean has decided that he is going to get neck deep into this amazing phenomenon. It kind of just took hold. Like I'm usually at the front post of, you know, figuring out all the stuff that's going on in the gaming world. Or at least I try to read up on everything. But the first time I mentioned Gaslands in the tavern, like six people were like, yeah, dude, we've been talking about that for weeks now. Gaslands is basically miniatures wargaming using modified Hot Wheels, and it looks amazing. And Sean has created a full set of demo cars for Gaslands, and he's going to be teaching people how to play that throughout the con. That makes me really, really entertained. We try to kind of add something to the mix. We try to add something that we didn't do the year before while maintaining all the stuff that worked in previous years. And so I'm excited for the potential of what this looks like. I hope a lot of people want to come out and play Gaslands. That's just some of the stuff we've got going. There's a ton of food. There's just the amazing prize raffle. We already have a handful of donations that have come in already. We're going to be continuing to gather more and try to get other people excited about this. We've got stuff from Restoration Games, Portal Games. Obviously, our friends from Kara Games have given us a bunch of stuff. We've got some people in the community have decided they wanted to donate stuff as well. We've got some other stuff that is supposed to be coming in soon, and hopefully that will be coming up. But one of the other cool things is that it's not all games, because one of the things that has been added to the pool this year from our friends at WhimsyWorks is we're going to have a stuffed owlbear, and that makes me happy. Because I love our stuffed little owlbear that they sent us, and I want more people to enjoy the wonder that is that cute little stuffed awesomeness. TavernCon is going to be a lot of what I talk about for the entirety of the next month, and probably a little bit after that. So, if you want to help, if you're in the area, we are going to be in the area of Warren, New Jersey on June 9th. The info is up on our website and all sorts of stuff like that. If you're in the area, we'd love it if you'd come out and play with us. It is an incredibly good time. It is 10 hours of open gaming, for crying out loud. When else do you get an excuse to do 10 hours of open gaming at zero cost to you? So we'd really, you know, love it if you'd come out. If you can't come out, but you still want to help and still want to be a part of things, you can. One of the prize pools that we try to do for our raffle is a collection of games from the community. It's kind of the games like, hey, you know, a lot of people who come to our event are new to gaming, and so they don't really have like a lot of knowledge as to what's a good game. And so we try to gather stuff from the community and be like, hey, you know, these people say that this game is good, and we trust these people because they're part of our community. They know what they're talking about. And so we love having a prize collection from the regulars. And so that one's steadily building. If you'd like to participate in that, we're not doing a lot of used games. We do want to give people new games. But if you either want to donate through our website, you can go to the PayPal account and donate that way. Just make sure that you tag it as, you know, contributing to the prize pool. Or you can just, if you'd like, the information on our PO box is also on the website. If you'd like to just, we've had people do this before where people just go to Amazon and say, I'm going to buy this. I'm going to send it directly to those guys. If you want to do that as well, that would be awesome. The cooler the prizes we have available for the raffle, the more people will want to buy tickets, and the more you will be supporting us doing what we do throughout the rest of the year. So, yeah. Oddly enough, that actually answers one of the questions, because one of the questions that we got was literally like, what can we expect to be awesome at TavernCon? So there you have it. There's one question down. The rest of these questions, I'm not going to tackle in any specific order. It literally was just, I went down from the Facebook post and I took all the comments in the order I saw them. So I'd posted it in a couple places, so that's all over the map. And also, basically, I'm recording the night after I started this process because of the fact that I was up very late last night, and my wife basically looked at me and said, no, dude, you're going to bed, like, right now. And so I agreed with her. I did not have the energy to even kind of say that that wasn't the right way to go. And so I actually ended up squeezing in a couple more questions earlier today. So, like I said, there's going to be a lot of cool stuff we're going to talk about, and hopefully, unless I am really missing the mark, I at least hope, I hopefully think that some of this will be entertaining and worth your time. Well, it's highly doubtful, but we'll see. Anyway, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to break down who asked what, because some people like asked a question and then came back later and asked another one. And so rather than worrying about that, unless the answer that I'm going to give is specifically related to the person asking the question, I'm not going to worry about that. So I would ask that if you were one of the people who contributed a question, I got to all of them. It will be in there. I'm just not going to spend a lot of time sifting through all of them and ordering them to make sure that, you know, this is your block. So please be listening. I will literally be reading them exactly as they were written in the comments. So that's how you can identify that this was your question. All right. All that, chicanery and craziness, you know, behind us, I think it's time I should just get to the questions. The first question was, what's the biggest process or procedural difficulty in running a ministry? The answer to that is paperwork. All the other stuff of doing the ministry, of scheduling stuff and making stuff happen and getting volunteers and even fundraising, which I hate fundraising. You know, as much as I talk about TavernCon, I'm not a fundraiser. I'd rather just worry about doing the work than paying for it, which gets me in a lot of trouble. But all that stuff, even the stuff that gets annoying, I love it because it's all part of doing ministry. Paperwork, on the other hand, is just tedium. I don't like paperwork on the best of days. And running a nonprofit has some of the most awful paperwork ever. It's funny because when we got our 501c3 status, I've had a bunch of people since then ask me like, what's your advice on how to get approval, how to become a 501c3? And I don't even hesitate to just look at them absolutely deadpan and 100% serious, say, get a lawyer. The morass of paperwork that's involved in setting this up, the truly obnoxious pit. Now, we're on the small end too. So, you know, we're not even one of the bigger ones that has even more elaborate and more crazy paperwork. And I live in New Jersey, and Inroads Ministries is technically, you know, housed in New Jersey, and our state doesn't really do complicated paperwork, but even still, this stuff is obnoxious and I hate it, but it's one of the costs of doing business, I should say. So yes, if you're out there and you're like, man, I'd love to do that, and you're one of our American listeners, because as I've discussed with many people who have listened to us overseas, they have all sorts of different processes themselves. But if you're here in the U.S. and you want to do a 501c3, get a lawyer. It will incredibly decrease the amount of pain and suffering you will have to go through. Next question. What is the best way to introduce people to tabletop gaming who are extremely apprehensive about gaming in general? Aside from just finding the right game for them. Aha, you've heard me talk about this before. Aside from just finding the right game for them, how do you get them to the table in the first place? The answer to this question is I don't. The one thing that I completely understand is the desire to get people to table, that you want more people playing. You want people who don't have any knowledge of what gaming is about. You want to tell them. Because if you're a gamer and you derive all sorts of joy from pushing cardboard and moving about little wooden cubes, you want other people to understand that and come along with you. But if they really don't want to, if they are absolutely at a loss for ever wanting to do this, whether it's just because they just don't find any value in it, or maybe the only knowledge of board games they ever had are painful family arguments over a round of Monopoly when the power went out, you're not going to change their mind on it. And if anything, they're going to be more and more frustrated. They're going to be a drain on everyone else at that table. But I don't want to just do that a cop-out answer, because I do think that it's still important to try and reach out to those folks, because again, I spend so much time talking about the power of the gaming table to do so much and to build powerful relationships across boundaries that would otherwise be insurmountable. So I'm not going to say don't do anything. I'm just going to say don't try to get them to the table. Instead, invite them to hang out with you when you're at the table. Ask them to kind of hang out and watch and just enjoy. Even if it's just like, hey, you don't have to play, but we're just all going to be here. And, you know, in between turns, you can just be hanging out. We have snacks, whatever. The more you can show people, not tell them, not explain to them, not even ask them to participate, but just the more you can expose them to what modern gaming looks like, because so many people don't understand that. The more you can show them what that is, that's how you kind of bridge that gap. If you've shown them, if they've seen how much fun you're having, if you've kind of let them taste and see what gaming has to offer, and they still have no desire to be a part of it, I hate to tell you, just let them go. Because trying to get somebody who's that adamantly against gaming to game will just end badly for all of you. Ooh, I like this next one. What is your favorite board game under $10? That is hard because, as I've often said on our show before, I am a fan of giant, not really giant. I'm not one of the guys who's like 6 to 8 hour epics. It's not that I don't want to, it's just that I don't have that time anymore. But $10, I do tend to like a 2 to 4 hour sit. And so it's really hard to find a 2 to 4 hour sit for $10. So I really kind of, this question, this limitation really, really does kind of focus me and harness me. And I told you I was going to mention Button Shy Games again, and here here is where that happens. Buttonshy does wallet games, and they do very, very good wallet games. Most of them are about 16 cards, and that's it. And you'd think that, you know, talk about my $10 is a limitation. 16 cards, you'd think, wow, that'd be so limiting. There's no way you could make a good game. I can give you by name a couple of them that are my favorites, and this is only a small fraction of their catalog. My favorites are Circle the Wagons, which is a cool symbol matching game. And again, there's too many questions. I got to move forward. But Circle the Wagons, Avignon, Clash of Popes is a cool little two-player game where you're trying to change people's influence to try and get more people to your side so that they name you Pope. And Universal Rule, which is a tiny card game that tries very hard to be a 4X game. And I'm not going to lie, for what it is, it does yeoman's work trying to make that happen. And all of the wallet games are either, depending on where you're getting them and if it's a Kickstarter or if you're ordering from their site, it's either $10 or right around $10. So I love, love, love Buttonshy. The relationship that we have with Jason and the folks at Buttonshy is entirely based on the fact that I love the games they make, and we've just built from there. They do really cool stuff in very small packages. Part two of that question, actually, is what is my pet game? And the way they define pet game is a game that people don't like nearly as much as you do. It's going to be fun because, again, folks who have listened to us over the years already know the answer to this question. The game is City of Remnants. City of Remnants is a criminally underrated game. But at the same point, I'm never confused by people who say they don't like it, because it is a beautiful mess. It is a game that is just a combination of the most insane aspects of gaming. It has asymmetric gameplay. It has area control. It has all sorts of craziness dropping on your heads at any given moment. It's card management. It's auction house. There's so much going on, and it shouldn't work, but by golly, do I love it. That is my game that I will champion because there are so few other people championing it. It has kind of dropped down. It used to be, it held the number one spot in my heart for ages. It was my number one game for a long, long time. It has since dropped down to that. It's still in my top nine. As everyone was doing their top nines recently on all the social media, it's still in there, but I will champion that one as the day is long, because more people need to know that game exists. What is your guilty pleasure game? And he goes to define it. By that I mean, what game do you really enjoy that other gamers would look at you and say, "I thought we were friends"? Also, why do you enjoy it so? And this one was funny because it was asked me by a guy who I've known for ages now and who I got into gaming. I'm just going to say it. So this is my buddy Dave. And I'm going to go dig deep, because I don't really have guilty pleasure games by and large. Pretty much, if I like a game, I don't feel any guilt about liking it. Whether it's because of whatever, because it's fallen off the hype train, or just because something better has come along and quote unquote replaced it. I don't care about any of that stuff. If I like a game, I like a game. But if I dig deep enough in the history books, if I go way back, I got a game that is a roll and move mess. It is horrible. It is stupid. And if it was anything other than what it is, I would never go anywhere near it. It is a game called Nightmare. Or, as some of you may be from overseas, Atmosphere. Atmosphere. This was a VHS horror game. And the first one of them came out with the host of the evening, known as the Gatekeeper. And it's super dumb. The game is horrible. The game has a on average a 1 in 4 chance that you just instantly lose for no good reason. I don't care. It's amazing when you have to find yourself just shouting into the heavens, "Yes, my gatekeeper." It's awesome when you're having a staring contest with your TV. A staring contest that lasts way too long. You gotta find. I will tell you that the link to the gatekeeper video, like you obviously you can't get the game board and everything, but the video for Nightmare is on YouTube. Find it, because if you skip past all the points where it's literally just a clock and you skip just to the parts that the gatekeeper is talking, my goodness, it's a joy. This next question was elaborate. This next question is, you have $200 to spend on one game. This game will also be the only game that you can play for the rest of your life. There are other people with you, but there is no promise that they will last a whole lot longer. What game do you buy for my $200? I thought about this one a lot, because $200 pretty much gives you most board games. I think the only one that it wouldn't would be Kingdom Death Monster, and that game looks fun, but eh. For me, if I had $200 to spend, I would get... It's fun because I already have this game, but I would spend the $200 to get a really nice, fully decked out, fully expanded version of Scythe. There's a couple reasons for that. One, because there's so much flexibility with Scythe. I'm even pronouncing it improperly, in my opinion. Scythe, there's so much flexibility in not only the faction that you play, you have a different board because, you know, you shuffle that up each time. So maybe this time you're good at manufacturing. Maybe the next time you're good at military. So there's so much options to change what's happening. Not only that, it also has a solo mode. So the one part of this super elaborate, super specific question that says the other people might not be playing with you much longer. Scythe has a really good solo mode. I've played it. The automaton player kicked my butt, but it was a fun time. And so, yeah, Scythe is my favorite game, and it's for a lot of the reasons that it's my favorite game that I would do this, and I would get all the expansions, including the Wind Gambit, which I don't have, and including the one that hasn't released yet, which is apparently going to have a co-op mode. Oh my goodness, I love that game. Okay, but yes, a fully decked out Scythe with all the expansions. For $200, I could probably throw in some of the resource packs that change it from being like simple little cubes into these elaborate, cool, three-dimensional things. And maybe I'd scrape up enough money to kind of add on a insert of some sort. I don't know. I would literally drop all that money on a really, really nice copy of Scythe. The first one that has nothing to do with game, well, sort of. It's more about the ministry than it is about games. Which Christian authors do you find most helpful as resources in running a geek ministry? Very few can I say specifically, like, this book will help you do this. There's one, Stephen Weiss, God Loves the Freaks, which is fun because he was just on Saving the Game as well. That book is great. It basically there's a lot of stuff going on in this book. But the one thing that it does really well is to help you identify the fact that this is like going into any other culture. So it for me, it gave me the mindset that yes, this is in fact missions. You are entering into a culture to try and speak into that culture and share the love of God in that culture. So yeah, he asks some really important, really interesting questions, and I think it's a valuable resource. I wanted to throw in a couple books that I don't know if everyone would consider them helpful, but I would. First one is Howard Hendricks' Color Outside the Lines. This is an entire book about creativity. That's all it is. It challenges you to step outside of the normal, everyday, bland kind of life and try to embrace creativity. This is the one of the things that made me realize that every one of us is creative, just some of us use it better than others. I always hate it when people look at me and say that I'm not creative. I said, no, you are. You're just not used to it yet. It's like somebody who walks into the gym for the first time. You don't pick up 400 pounds when you walk into the gym at the first time. And so, yeah, that mindset of trying to build up your creativity, because being creative is something that is built into us as an aspect of the image of God. Boom. Donald Miller, Blue Like Jazz. This one is just mostly me. I love that book. And that book, as well as some of the other ones, Blue Like Jazz really did kind of solidify for me the idea that we put church and ministry and all that into a very tiny box. And while I'm not going to say, you know, a lot of times people want to just swing the pendulum to the other side and say, let it all, like, who cares? It's all ministry, whatever. I'm not that guy either. But at the same point, this kind of broadened my box, as it were. It made it much, much larger. And I think that kind of, the questions that it asks helps me identify the ability to ask those questions, the freedom to be able to say, okay, well, this doesn't seem like a good idea to me. How can we do this and still be following after God? This one I kind of just threw in there just because I think that we need to always remember how to laugh at each other and laugh at ourselves. Dan Merchant, Lord Save Us From Your Followers. This book is a joy, as long as you're able to laugh at yourself. If you're going to be upset that someone's pointing out the flaws of church folk and Christian culture, do not even kind of go near Lord Save Us From Your Followers. But this book is a great, you know, a lot of times we get all geared up and like, yeah, I'm excited. This is going to be great. This is going to be awesome. We're going to do something for Jesus. And then completely realize that, oh, hey, that thing that I tried to do, no one cares. And it just made all of us look stupid. And I love this book. This is a guy who literally would dress up in a suit made of Christian bumper stickers and would engage people to talk about what their favorite ones were. This guy, it's a fun book. The last two are probably the most abstracted as far as the how they'll be helpful to geek ministry, but I think that at least for me, they kind of get me in the right kind of mindset. One speaks to the way we move towards God, and the other speaks to the way God moves towards us. The first one is Gary Thomas. It's a book called Sacred Pathways. And this book kind of identifies a number of different kind of ways that we as human beings are drawn to God. And some of it is very typical, like the traditionalist is somebody who really loves that kind of high church, that kind of ritual. And then there's also things like the naturalist, who just really feels connected to God when out in the woods and is praying on a nature hike and stuff like that. There's things about sensates who are, it has to be about, you know, all the senses have to be brought into it, and all these different types of styles of worship. And I think that that's really important when you're talking about this kind of ministry, because, you know, you do have to have a mix of the traditional with the outright weird and the undefinable in some spaces. Because this can't look like everyday church. And so Gary Thomas's book really kind of helps you look like, okay, so maybe we're not going to get the church vibe, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to church. It means that we have to identify these pathways, identify how do we evoke that same kind of thing. And how do we speak to people in a way that moves them one step closer to God than they were before? The last book is God With Us by Glenn Kreider. Now, I am biased. Anytime you were to ask me who are my most influential people that I sat under while I was in seminary, Dr. Glenn Kreider would be one of them. So I am biased. But Glenn's written a lot of books, and this is the only one I'm going to suggest here. So there's that. Glenn does a phenomenal job of really allowing us to see the humility of God. That there's a phrase that he uses over and over and over again, that God condescends to his people. And we kind of bring a lot of baggage to that word, but literally the technical definition is to be up from a place of on high and stepping down from that place to be able to speak into a person who is lower. That's literally what God does for us. And that idea of God himself stepping down to speak with us in our humble place reminds me that all of us need to step off our freaking theological high horse and just get to be with people, I want to be clear, not throw away our doctrine, not throw away our very important, very crucial knowledge of who God is and how he functions, but at the same point, to do that and to speak that with a level of humility that says, we can get to that stuff later, I just want to be with you right now. And that understanding of how God does that for us all the time, and how the grace of God allows us to see him because he is so far above us, so perfect, so beyond, that he has to come to step to us before we can even begin to interact with him. We cannot see that and then come from a place of, I'm better than you and you need to sit down and listen. It reminds us that every one of us are able to know God because the sheer knowledge that he stepped down to be with us. This next question is clearly being asked by somebody who is, I don't know, either bored with the average questions or is just really good at getting to the stuff. Because normally people ask questions like, what did you do here? Or what did you do here? Or what would you never do here? This question is, what's the best advice you didn't take? The short version is that if you listen to the very first episodes, in fact, the first 100 episodes of this podcast, you will hear a different voice than who you hear on it now. That man's name was Luke Navarro. Luke is pivotal to what Inroads is now, but he also would have been the reason we went in a completely different direction. When we were first cooking up what Inroads was going to be, what Inroads was going to become, he wanted to just make stuff. He wanted to do, like, let's make curriculums, or let's make Vacation Bible School stuff, or let's do stuff like that. And I'm like, I love that stuff, and I don't not want to do that stuff, but there's an important ministry going on here. Like, the emails that we get and the people that we've connected with just because of the act of actually playing together, I don't want to just make stuff to have somebody else do that. I want to be a part of that. I really feel like I was uniquely called to be a part of that. And I want to be very clear, there was no bad blood when Luke left. It was literally just there are some people who are starters of things. Luke was a church planter. Luke started Game Store Profits with me as another podcast he was on was fading. Like, there are people who are just starters, and Luke is, at least he was, I haven't spoken to him in a long time, but at least at the time Luke was a definitive starter. And so there's no way that Game Store Profits and Inroads Ministries would have existed without him. At the same point, if I'd listened to him, Inroads Ministries would not be what it is today. And so that's pretty much, I think, the best way I could answer that question. Next question is, what do you feel is the most emotionally moving game you've played? What game do you feel can change someone's viewpoint on a critical issue, whether moral, spiritual, or personal? the most emotionally moving game I've played is a hard one, because there have been a lot of emotional games, but it's hard to say whether that was the game or me. Like, I would say that I had a very emotional reaction to playing And Then We Held Hands with my wife, but that was more me than the game, as proven by the blank stares and weird looks my wife gave me. It wasn't the game that did that, it was my impression of it. And so I think that I would have to go back to the old well that is Freedom, the Underground Railroad. Everything about that game evokes powerful emotions. And I think the fact that when I tried to get my friend to play it, he goes, "That is too close to home for me. I can't do it." Like, it's not that it's the kind of game, because this guy's played some pretty hardcore stuff with me. It was the fact that it was about slavery. And the fact that his family lineage, you know, can trace back to some of that stuff, and that hit home for him. And here I am having this, my own emotional experience, and I'm disconnected from that. And so I would definitely say that based on my experience with the game and what the game itself evokes in people, I would say that Freedom the Underground Railroad definitely fits that niche. As far as what game I feel could change somebody's viewpoint, I don't think a board game will ever do that. Now, to be fair, I think that a role-playing game, or even a board game that is more storytelling-based, has potential to that. But like, I think you have to go to the role-playing aspect of that, because there needs to be that level of full immersion that I don't want to say unknowing, because you kind of know the whole way that you're being in that place and you're putting yourself in that position, but just the subtle underlying stuff that you didn't realize about yourself or others until it played out in the game, you're not going to get that out of a board game. You need to go for the role-playing game, which is funny because this question was asked by Jack Birkenstock of the Piranha Group. I felt that way long before I met Jack, and knowing him has only increased this understanding. I really think role-playing games can do that in spades. I think board games can identify, but I don't think board games can change. I think you have to go for role-playing games with that. What game do you feel exemplifies the feelings of mission of gaming, adding to or enhancing ministry? Oh, a game that adds to or enhances ministry. It's okay. You know what? I'm just going to have to do it. If there's any one game that has had more, gosh, let's have long conversations about Christianity and ministry and the nature of how we do this, it's A Game for Good Christians. A Game for Good Christians. And I'll mention this game again later. It's going to happen, but I have to do it here. A Game for Good Christians is a game that uses, you know, some irreverent imagery. It uses some naughty language. It has no problems being very blunt with some very, let's just call it, adult kind of stuff. But at the same point, it is all in the purpose of interacting with the text of scripture. And there have been a ton of people who get very uncomfortable with that game. I got a lot of pushback when I said I really wanted to add it to the Inroads approved game list. But every time there's pushback, I always cite the same conversation, which I've heard played out a number of times. But this one was just the quintessential, the Platonic ideal of this conversation. It was at an Extra Life game marathon. And these guys sat down after playing games all day long. They just needed something silly, and they busted out A Game for Good Christians. And this gentleman walked up to me and he said, "I have opened up my Bible more in the last hour than I think I have in the last month." And that right there it brings out just the very nature that we don't always have to be whitewashed, super clean, you know, high example of goodness and righteousness to get to the heart of what the Bible teaches and get to the heart of who God is. That there are times when I call it my Elijah and the Prophets of Baal moment. It's my Mount Carmel moment. It's, you know, we always want to think of the prophets as these very stoic, very staunch, very, very like super holy guys. But man, there was sarcasm, man. He's taunting the prophets of Baal, saying things like, hey, maybe you should shout a little louder because your God might be going to the bathroom. You might be interrupting him. Like, I love stuff like that. And it reminds me that a lot of times we have this vision of the Bible that is either not what the Bible is or is actually contradictory to what the Bible is. We have had this weird kind of relationship with it. And I am a firm believer in a lot of the same stuff that causes a lot of people to really go whole hog on scripture. I believe in inerrancy. I believe in inspiration. I believe in all of the doctrines that revolve around the fact that this is the word of God. I'm still going to tell you, we have a weird relationship with that book because we make it something that it isn't and we ignore a lot of what it is. So yeah, bar none, that game right there, the idea of I'm going to step into your world and be ridiculous and be exactly what you think I'd never be in order to tell you who God is. It's that game all the time. What game was instrumental in your decision or awakening to the passion of gaming and ministry? Oddly enough, it's a game that I can't stand. We literally, in the last episode, just talked about the fact that I can't stand 4th edition D&D. I don't like it. It's fine for what it does, but I have no desire to do what it does. But it was the game of 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons that I started playing with my buddies after I got home from seminary. A game that I have participated in for nigh on a decade. A game that it has broken my heart that I can't be playing in right now. Because the birth of my son means I just don't have the time to travel down there and hang out with those guys for an entire Saturday like I used to. That game and being with those guys, I could point to a lot of different games that could potentially fit that mold and be in that space. There's lots of them that I could. That one, I think, if I had to nail it down, being with those guys, some of if you want to have a faith on a spectrum, you got a whole bunch of different people in there in a whole big swath of different places spiritually and faith wise. Not a one of them are any kind of like sold out Christian. But anytime they need prayer, I've gotten that phone call. I've performed the marriages of several of them. And these guys know that if there's anything that they need, they just call me and I'm there. And that reminded me, I'm like all these guys know that I do ministry. They in fact, it is the joke every once in a while that, you know, of course Pern is going to play the cleric and that kind of stuff. All those jokes have been made. And yet that it's the quintessential example for me of how this is supposed to be. So this one wasn't so much a question as a command. It says, tell me a story about a specific time where you really connected with someone through gaming, specifically since the start of the ministry. This is like explain the universe and give two examples. There's so many that I could do that I'm almost at a loss. Probably if I had to nail it down to one, I can't even do one moment, but it's just one relationship that I knew this guy before this, before the gaming, before Inroads, before all that. I knew him, but there was a certain connection that happened afterwards and after playing and after taking him to conventions with me and that sort of stuff His name's Jeremy. He was a kid in my youth group when I was doing youth group. He was a quiet guy. He still is a very quiet guy, but getting him out to conventions and I literally handed him all my fourth edition books after fifth edition came out. And I'm like, yes, please. I handed them to him because he said, I'm really interested in being a dungeon master. And I just gave him like hundreds of dollars worth of books. And just to see the look in his face when I did that, and to have the conversations that we've had since then, that started off with things like discussing how Ashes is one of the greatest two-player card games in existence. And after I kind of convinced him that he needed to buy his own set, like that, I think would be one that is great. Like I said, that relationship was there, but it grew and became what it is now because of those times that we talked about gaming. How have you overcome objections or concerns from churches when you've approached them about starting a gaming ministry or doing a gaming event there? This is another one where I'm going to do a semi cop out and say, I don't convince a church that they need to do this. There's nothing I can say that's going to turn somebody from this is stupid and silly to we need to do this now. At the same point, I'm going to tell you a story about my church, my home church. Oddly enough, the church in which TavernCon is being hosted and has been hosted for the past 3 years. When I first started Inroads, I actually had one of the elders tell me point blank that when we first started, he didn't think there was any value in what we were doing. He point blank said that. But the conversation we were having when he told me that was, is that he goes, I've watched you over the past 2 years do this work. I have watched you play and heard you talk about it, seen you build these relationships. He cut me a check for Gen Con when the church wouldn't. He flew me to Gen Con because he believed in the work we were doing. But it took 2 years of doing the work and letting him see that that work was being done and that work was valuable and that work was in fact being done by God in us. So really, there's no way I can convince somebody if they have an absolute hatred of what we're doing. I can't. There's no phrase or no action that I can do to convince them otherwise. All I can do is do work and show them what God is doing in what we're doing, because he is most definitely moving. This is the same person also asked what can we expect at TavernCon? We've already been through that. What RPG have you not played yet that you would like to play? And the second part is, what is a new RPG that is yet to come out that you are looking forward to trying out? We'll do the second part first because it's easy. Invisible Sun. Invisible Sun. I thought that Invisible Sun was going to be a pipe dream. It was this cool, weird world put together by the folks at Monte Cook Games using a system that is not the same but very similar to the Cypher system. It has this cool app integration, and it actually writes in mechanics as to how to deal when people can't make it to game day. Like, we've all been doing that for years in the games that we've been playing. This system actually has it built in. I'm so absolutely frothing to try and get this game to table. I look forward to it because we had a very, very gracious donor who said, you guys talk about this enough, I want to buy it for you as long as you use it for the ministry. So heads up, when it gets here, plan on seeing it on our YouTube channel or a podcast or a write-up or multiples of those things. But yeah, no, I desperately want to get Invisible Sun. As far as games that I haven't played yet that I want to, this could be a lot of them because it's only been recently that I've kind of expanded out from D&D. For most of my role-playing career, it was D&D and those other things existed elsewhere. So it's only been recently that I've seen other stuff. Some of them, there's one that I really want to play. The only reason I haven't played it is because it's still brand new and I only just got the PDFs for it. It's called Kids on Bikes, where you're basically playing as a bunch of kids in a small suburban town solving mysteries. Think Stranger Things or Goonies or Stand By Me or all that stuff. You get to, all your characters are the kids in that little group. I want to play that badly. Dungeon World, I can't talk to Jeff Romo and not hear about this amazing system that is narrative based. I want to play it. I want it in my eyes. And then one system that it boggles my mind that I haven't played yet is Fate. I've never played a single Fate game, and that hurts me because Fate seems like a system that would be almost tailor-made for me. But yeah, I just haven't played it. What is the best character you've ever played in an RPG in terms of how you had a personal or meaningful connection to the character? I appreciate the softball of this question. His name is Drogon Anvilsong, the wayward son of High Helm, the dwarf bard responsible for all of the dwarf bard-related jokes and statements I've ever made, ever. He is the reason that the Bard and Bible podcast is called the Bard and Bible. Drogon and I have a very... If people from the outside of gaming heard me talk about Drogon, they might actually think that everything that people say that's bad about roleplaying is true, because I talk about Drogon like he's a real person. The emotional I literally have a write up about Drogon and dwarf bards, on our site, like, so that's all there, but Drogon really was an example of how, in a positive note, how playing this character showed me who I was in a way I couldn't even see about myself. Some of the underlying themes of Drogon that I kept saying, like, this guides his decision making, is that he cannot abide by the proud. He will show them humility, and he will always come to the defense of those who can't defend themselves. And he is a man who is very quick to have a beer and a laugh and a song rather than a fight. But God help you, if you get into a fight with him, he's going to put his axe in your forehead. I described that to my wife, who doesn't do role-playing games at all. And she looked at me and she said, "That's you. You're basically playing you." And I don't know. I always really liked Drogon. And so the idea that she identified me in his characteristics, it's still like, it's funny. I'm sitting here and I'm tearing up a little bit as I think about it, because I had such a fondness for that character and such an amazing time playing him, not just because of the stuff that he did, because he did some really cool stuff, but just who he was and the fact that she identified me in that character. It's still kind of emotional for me. What's a good way to begin a tabletop ministry at your church? Do it. I think that's like my third just blunt, silly, stupid response, but it's really true. Do it. Don't worry about making it a ministry first, is more of a literal expanded kind of thing to that. Don't worry about labeling it a ministry. Just gather people together, play games, build relationships, demonstrate to people that this is what ministry looks like. Sometimes it's hard, especially when you're talking with people in a very traditional environment of churches, to get them excited about the idea of ministry if you don't share Bible stories, if you don't have a conversion moment. It's hard for people to see that as ministry sometimes if you're just locked into a very traditional church model. You have to show them and tell them the stories. You have to be able to point to them and say, "This is a life that was changed." Do I have, like, thousands of people coming to Jesus? Probably not. If you do, God bless you. Please keep doing it. But you probably won't. But just do it. And eventually, you might have people come alongside you that says, "Yes, what you're doing is awesome, and I want to see it happen." The big thing If I was to nail down any kind of difference, and I've written about this on our site, if any difference between just gathering a game night and doing gaming ministry is one of intentionality. If your ministry only involves the game when it's being played, if it only involves talking about games, if you've never moved into other aspects of that relationship, if you've never built off of what happens at the table and gone into that person's life and let them come into yours, you're not doing ministry. You're just having a game night, which is fine. It's just not ministry. You need to see this as the opportunity to build the relationship that makes the real impact. If it stays at the table, it's not ministry. What is your favorite game to introduce kids to board games that are more complex than Snakes and Ladders? And why is that favorite game the Grim Forest? I would say that the Grim Forest probably would be, but I don't have it yet. I really desperately want it. I love the fact that it's the Three Little Pigs and fairy tales and all that shenanigans. The Grim Forest is amazing. It probably wouldn't be my first one, though. My games that I use to get people in, I'll tell you. There's three companies that I cite that pretty much anything in their catalog is going to work. Blue Orange Games, Haba Games, and Peaceable Kingdom. Pretty much anything in the catalog of those three companies, Blue Orange maybe a little bit, because it's all kid-friendly, but not always as... but yeah, those three companies, anything. Pick it. Find something that hits a theme that you like and run with it. Because those three companies are dedicated to making kids' games that aren't terrible. And they all do a very phenomenal job of it. If you're looking for a specific one, I don't know, Rhino Hero. There's another one I'm going to mention later because somebody else asked another question about kids' games. So I'll talk about that one later. How do you handle difficult players in your gaming group? Antagonistic, hyper-competitive, to the point that nobody likes playing with them. And it's an outreach trumps entertainment, right? Yes, Ron, it always does. That said, I'm a big proponent of making sure everyone feels welcome at a table. If somebody's feeling alienated or they don't belong there, I'm not a fan. If there's a problem that people are having and it's just personal between a couple folks, I try to just be the mediator and help them work through whatever they're dealing with. However, if somebody is really, really just being gross and ugly and making the entire experience bad for everyone, they get a warning. And if they don't calm themselves down or if they get, you know, insulted that I'm ruining their fun, I'll kindly ask them to leave. I would not have the evenings of a dozen people ruined because some guy didn't get to alpha game. That's just the way of it. I always try to mediate when possible. I try to fix whatever weird kind of relational conflict is happening. But if that can't happen, I'm going to tell that dude to get lost, and I'll probably do it a lot nicer than that. But yeah, no, I will, I will shut that door and save the rest of everybody playing. What are games with great table presence that are easy to teach new gamers? There are a bunch of these that I could cite. The ones that come to mind immediately, Rhino Hero / Rhino Hero Super Battle. Either one of them is good. Cash and guns, those foam guns, and just the idea that you have to shout Banzai every round. Yes. Blood Rage. There's no time ever that I've played Blood Rage that at least one person hasn't walked up and go, "Ooh, what is that?" Blood Rage is a little bit more on the complicated side, but it's one of the games that falls into my mindset that, look, it's going to sound complicated. We're going to play one round and you know exactly what you're dealing with. So it still works for me. Barker's Row is great. It's a simple card game. But the three-dimensional bandstands that you're dealing with, and all the little rubes, the amazing artwork on the little rubes, and the strongman tower and all that stuff, that sits on a table and everyone's going to see it and everyone's going to be just wondering what the heck is going on. Flick 'em Up is great. You literally build a little Western on the tabletop and you're flicking stuff. Lots of people are shouting. It's a great time. Mechs versus Minions, those minis draw a crowd. There's no doubt about it. And the fact that anybody who's ever played League of Legends or even been League of Legends adjacent knows what's going on there. And one that I would throw in, if you go the extra mile to get an accessory for it, is Burgle Bros, because you literally have a three-dimensional tower. It's a very simple game. It's a co-op game, which is always good for teaching new gamers. But yeah, no, you need the tower for it to really have the table presence. And I feel like I need to define table presence now that I've already gone through all this. Table presence for me, whether it's the size and scope of the thing on the table or the height and the craziness of it, it needs to be something that it would draw somebody walking down the hallway who passes the door of the room you're playing in to be like, the heck is going on in there? I need to investigate this. So anything that's going to stand up from the table and catch somebody's eye, or if it causes them to be loud and silly and draws somebody in to figure out what's happening, that's a win. If you could play one RPG system for the rest of your life, what do you choose and why? That is the Cypher system. I would say Numenera, but because they've released the generic rule set, I will just say the Cypher system. I love this system. It does a very good job of balancing crunchy, numbery, dice rolly good times with narrative-based shenanigans. And I love the freedom of it. I love the ability for both player and GM to come up with elaborate things, and the GM can take these weird, over-the-top, crazy things and just be like, okay, here's your number, without worrying about all the other stuff. Just like, all right, here you go. It's this hard. Go for it. I like the GM intrusions. I like that it makes players evaluate what's going on, and it allows a GM to speak into the story without railroading it, because the players always have the option to say, forget that noise, I'm out. I really like the system, whether it's Numenera, The Strange, all the different weird versions they've come up. I love that system. Absolutely. I would play that forever and for always. What do you find offensive in a board game, whether it be content related or actual gameplay related? Very, very little. I find very, very little offensive in board games, because for me, I've always said that the board game exists in a world unto itself. So you'd have to work really hard to have a game that's worth playing that I couldn't find some value in. Now, there's lots of stuff that gets created that I'm like, okay, this is just offensively bad. But I don't have any, there's no reason to be offended by it, because I just don't care about it. There's never in my mind been a moment where I find myself going, this is a great game, I wish the theme was different. And to be more specific, yes, I've wished themes are different, but it's not like, oh, I'm feeling gross and disgusting. It's more along the lines of, I know other people will be negatively affected by this theme, and thus I can't be a part of it. There have been several games where I find myself going, if somebody else buys this, I want in, but I'm not going to pick it up. I think the only thing that would come close would be the one that everyone was raging against, which was when Simon put out the Kickstarter for Hate. It's the closest thing that you're going to find. And even then, if you look at the world of the comic book that game is based on, I don't say I'm going to get offended. And again, if somebody bought it and put it in front of me, I'd probably play it. But it just seems to be gross for the sake of being gross. And I don't care about that. It's not even, I'm not even offended. It's apathy, not offense. What game would you never recommend and why? Here's where Game for Good Christians comes in again. Cards Against Humanity is a game that I will never recommend to anyone. It remains the only game on our banned games list. If you're at one of our events, you will not see Cards Against Humanity played. Which seems rather silly, because a Game for Good Christians is basically Cards Against Humanity with the Bible. And so this confuses a lot of people when I say this, that I have an absolute loathing for Cards Against Humanity. The big thing about it is intentionality. The guys from A Game for Good Christians want you to interact with your Bible, want you to pick up and look at the texts that you don't read, the minor prophets, and all the stuff that you either skip over or just haven't ever read. Because there's a lot of portions of the Bible that people don't read just because it doesn't show up in church on Sunday. They also want you to interact with what's actually happening. There are so many times when we just kind of, and it's funny because in an interview with them, I actually coined the phrase flannel graphing. I made flannel graph a verb. We flannel graph the Bible, where we're like, oh yeah, this is a story and this happened and isn't that cute? And we're just like, did you ever think about what's happening here? Like the card for Noah and the ark and the flood, the card for that is millions of dead bodies floating alongside the ark. Like those guys, their whole purpose for everything that they do is to get people honestly approaching scripture. Cards Against Humanity, literally their tagline is basically just how terrible a person can you be? Like there you go. I'll retroactively say that Cards Against Humanity offends me because it's not a good game. It's literally just how gross can I be? And if you want to do that for a purpose, like I said, with A Game for Good Christians, it does a lot of the same things. It ticks a lot of the same boxes, but for the purpose of something greater, something bigger, something important. Whereas Cards Against Humanity is literally just ha-ha, fart joke, sex joke, racist joke. Golly, I hate that game. Okay, I'm sorry. And again, if you're listening and you like it, more power to you. I'm never going to be okay with Cards Against Humanity. What's the first game you hope to play with your son? Spoken by a mom. The first game I would like to play with him is My Little Scythe. Somebody took Scythe and made a kid's version, and I want to play that with my son so desperately it hurts. The problem is that it will be a very long time before he's able to do that, and I want to be playing games with him before then. So it would probably be either something along the lines of My First Orchard, which is a Haba game that's for little kids. Probably, if it's talking about games that I have on my shelf right now, I'm actually working on an article for Geek Dad about the fact that I want to introduce my boy to gaming using Animal Upon Animal. And I desperately look forward to walking him through playing games with that, to where he starts off just holding and touching these chunky wooden animals, to piling them up and stacking them up without so much rules or anything like that, to eventually playing the game. Like, you have no idea how much I'm looking forward to walking him through that and walking with him as he explores what games are like using Animal Upon Animal. I'm really looking forward to that. What games are particularly good at encouraging strength in girls without sexualizing them? Gosh, that's a $64 million question. That is a very good one. And I would say that games now are being better about that than they were. There are a lot of games where they rely on a lot of old school fantasy art tropes. So a lot of chainmail bikinis. But as more and more people have been stepping into having this conversation and how important representation is and how, you know, maybe you should have other options. Like, yeah, you can have the sexy woman over there doing her thing. Why not? You can have that. But maybe you can also have some fully armored ladies, or you can have some very intelligent ladies that actually have clothing. Some of the ones that I would immediately cite, there's two that I would definitely cite right off the bat. One Deck Dungeon is a dungeon crawl card game, which is a lot of fun. And the characters are really neat, and they represent all sorts of different stuff. You've got somebody who's very strong. You have some people who are very smart. You got people who are very dexterous and skilled. And the people who designed One Deck Dungeon and who publish it as Mahdi Games made a conscious decision that said every one of our characters is a woman. And I think what's really interesting is that they took a lot of grief for that, but they didn't care. They're like, this is our decision. There are plenty of other games you can go out and play that are all the characters are dudes. It's time we have one that's all women. That's just our decision. So One Deck Dungeon is always my go-to for that. Another one, and this goes everything. It says race, gender, everything. Orientation. Ashes. Ashes Rise of the Phoenixborn. I'm a bit biased because I love this game, but having talked with the designer, Isaac Vega, having seen, and I haven't met her yet, but having seen interviews with Fernanda Suarez, the artist behind Ashes, they go out of their way to make sure that these characters have a variety of personalities, a variety of look. And yeah, the likelihood that you're going to find somebody that you can relate to in the Ashes universe is pretty significant. And so I will always recommend that. One that as I was thinking about the answer to this question, I couldn't help but think about it, was oddly enough, the Arkham Horror games. The Arkham Horror games have just this wide variety of female characters, ranging from the two pistol packing, you know, just guns blazing character to the librarian. There's a lot of really cool characters in that game that I'm pretty confident you can find somebody that you can relate to being awesome in the way that you want to be awesome. So, and I think that you're only going to see more of these happen. I think even from simple things like games anymore are often choosing to double side their character sheets, where you can, the one side is a male character, the other side is a female character. More and more people are appreciating the fact that this conversation needs to happen, that representation is important. And so I think you're only going to see more and more games do that. All right, y'all, this actually turned out to be longer than an average episode, which I'm okay with, because I hope that I have answered your questions in a way that you'll find enriching and entertaining. Hopefully next episode, we will have the full complement of myself, Jeff Romo, and Daniel Fisher as we discuss all sorts of shenanigans that happened in between these episodes. And again, if you want to participate in TavernCon, we'd love to see you. If not, just hang out with us in the tavern, our online kind of place to be, our online Facebook group. We're happy to have you. We have this amazing collection of humanity, some of them Christian, some of them not. Those who are Christian literally span every major denomination I've ever been introduced to in my entire life. We have all manner of people talking all manner of stuff from all manner of places, and they do so with a lot of love and respect, and I greatly appreciate that. So, all that to say, always remember, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.